Parliament, but it has not been referred to us formally. And now we might get a letter from the Speaker this week or so that says, here is a matter that has been referred to you. Unfortunately, we had time and we did not deal with that issue. So we felt in our wisdom that, well, city will be referred at any rate. Let's just deal with it. What are the issues? What is the second commitment of the Kyoto Protocol? So those are the two items before us today. Of course, sustainable development is flowing through what we could not finish the last time. The last time we met with the department, we got presentations on Rhino, we got presentations on climate change, and we had discussions on the two. The third one was sustainable development. We couldn't touch it because of time constraints. So that's why we have then put it for agenda today. But I just felt that colleagues will know, since we are also having this public hearing starting this week, we felt that it's only appropriate that we brief everyone on where we are and the state of readiness. Of course, we will expect administration to do that. Over the weekend, for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I accompanied the administration to KZN, to Mpumalanga, and to Northwest. I would like to report to all members present here that indeed preparations are advanced. We are getting all stakeholders involved, the municipalities, the provincial departments, the provincial legislators, and also their public participation units are party to these public hearings that we'll be holding come this Friday and Saturday in KZN, next Friday and Saturday in Mpumalanga, and the other Friday and Saturday in the Northwest. Again, I'm happy to report to colleagues and the honorable members that in terms of the stakeholders broadly, we will have traditional leaders who will be part of these public hearings. We will have people that are drawn from the past, including people who might be rangers themselves, so that at this we get relevant stakeholders to interact on these matters. We will also have people who are drawn from industry in these provinces, so that you can't talk about climate change and you don't talk about industry. Of course, we also have people who are drawn from the legislatures themselves, the members of provincial legislatures, and also from the municipalities, your speakers, your mayors, and your councillors. So from where we are seated, we really have a nice cross-section of the South African populace that will indeed be in attendance. Of course, we'll also be expecting NGOs that are stakeholders in the environment sector to be part of this. And honourable members, by the way, you can invite also people to come. There's no reason why you can't. It's your public hearing. Any people that you think are relevant, you have every right to invite them to come as a member of parliament. So that is the level of readiness. In case that then through a community hall where we'll be having the first public hearing, again, the logistics are well afoot. We need sound, we need the screens, all those logistics are being set. Of course, we also need things like toilets. That's how the level of preparedness that we have entered into. Because in that hall, the toilets are not working as they should. Therefore, we have decided to get toilets that our people can use. In the venue at Thekwini, the venue at Thekwini is the only conference center. It used to be called the Ice Ring. Those who might know Durban. It has now been converted into a conference center. We have all the things that we need there at the center. The center has got all the things that we need, be it public address system, be it your, what do you call this, your screens, your projections. So we are quite happy. Of course, we will bring our own pending as Parliament, but in this, that venue has got all the things that we need. The only other venues, of course, the venue in Mpumalanga again, in Ngwenyama Lodge, the first venue in Bombela, also has all the things that we need. Is the Hoshane venue in Bushbuckridge, where we will have to bring things, and we are ready with a plan to bring all the things that we need to bring there. May, of course, again, the same will apply to Northwest. We'll have to bring almost everything in Northwest, your home province, and also erect a tent in one of the areas in Chobe. We have to put up a tent there. The good part is that we'll be putting up a tent in a community that is in a park. Again, we are quite happy that indeed we are interacting with the real people who matter from where we're seated. We ensure that we have the real people who matter in this public hearings. We are quite happy with the arrangements. Of course, we also want to take this opportunity to thank the department. Normally, departments don't send their officials with the officials of the portfolio committee on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This past week, we were with these officials, and they were quite helpful because they are able also to identify the stakeholders around and also link us up with people from the department in the various provinces. So we were quite happy with the level of commitment that the department illustrated with regard to these public hearings. We are very happy. The cooperation that we are getting from the department and also the provincial people in the department is indeed, it has brought almost tears to our eyes, and honestly speaking, because at times you think that public service officials are only there from Monday to Friday. And here they were, from Friday to Sunday late. This is quite heartening. And we would really like to thank you, Minister, for this, Deputy Minister, and also to the head of the department. We are very honored that we're able to work with people of this caliber. That's where we are. We said that we must just tell where we are preparing. In relation to your travels, I think you... Ms. Madubela is in touch with you. But our fear is that we should be there Thursday, all of us. Because as you will know, the Friday public hearing starts in the morning at 10. Therefore, again, we would like also as members of the committee on Friday morning at least to meet with some stakeholders. Particularly, you know, our traditional leaders expect a certain, action from us. You know, there's a way we treat them, but also just to acknowledge the mayors of the towns and other stakeholders that we have worked with before we even start, so that we just mingle with them and we thank them for making it happen. By the way, you can't have a public hearing as national parliament unless you're able to work with people there. You can't. It's just impossible. So we have seen clear indications that provinces and municipalities are ready to work with us. So we'll have Friday morning just having some probably working breakfast with all these wonderful stakeholders that have made this possible before we even that to make a briefing to them before we even start. Just a briefing to some of our traditional leaders, the municipalities, and also the legislature, MPs, on what this is about. But with regard to your bookings and everything else, the committee secretary will assist with regard to that. I think they've already started speaking to you on that. And our is that let's be there on Thursday, sleep. You know, the way some of us are so stupid. We took a plane from here to Durban and we're going to Durban. We had to drive from Durban 2.5 hours to Durban. And we could have taken a flight to Richards Bay, but at least we're late. We could have taken a flight to Richards Bay, and it would have taken us an hour to get to Sisulu. So, indeed, we will then say that, of course, it makes sense that as we live here, we go straight to Richards Bay, and they probably sleep in Richards Bay, but there's no direct flight. You need to go through Johannesburg before you get to Richards Bay. So we'll have to speak to our chief whips that probably we might not be available on Thursday, because the flight leaves, I'm told, at 12 o'clock from here to Johannesburg, so that we're able to connect the Johannesburg to Richards Bay. But those are details that I think we will be informed of. All that we wanted to say that we are ready. I was just showing the indication of our readiness by giving all these details. That when you go there, colleagues and other members and ministers, deputy ministers, rest assured, you'll not be going for a wasteful expenditure. We'll be going for engagement with our people who are there, ready to engage. The enthusiasm that we also saw amongst the stakeholders that we engaged with in the past weekend were also happening, because they want to discuss these issues. They are ready to discuss these issues. So from us, on this issue, if there are no issues of clarity, I'm fine, we can pass. Yes, madam?
Thank you, Chair. So just to raise a point of concern, is that our last three committee meetings have all started late. The first one was scheduled for 9 and then changed to 9:30, but wasn't communicated, and then ended up closer to 10. Last week we also started at 10, and today we also started 10 minutes late. I know I've chatted to you about maybe starting a little bit earlier because we have so much important business to do, but I just wanted to lodge that, and if that can be please minuted. So, and in your introduction regarding the public hearing, thank you very much, Department. Everything sounds fantastic. And, Chair, I think you can also be commended for going with the Department to ensure that this committee, that the necessary arrangements are prepared. You touched on a number of drawings that were made. So we're drawing on provincial literature, we're drawing on local, we're drawing from traditional leaders, we're drawing from people within the park, etc. But I'm concerned that there hasn't been enough general publicity. Now, I'm in no way saying that the department need incur costs for advertising. Perhaps the press statements to the media that the media can then inform through radio and print about these hearings, so that any interested party who happens to be around the area can also then attend. Thank you very much, Chair.
I think, first of all, that's a fair to your first point. And I think all of us as parties must do everything in our power that we don't have many things on the mornings of the days when we're supposed to have portfolio committees. Indeed, it's a very valid point. When we say anything starts at 9:30, that meeting must start at 9:30. Point taken. I think we will do our bit. On the second issue, maybe if I comment on that one, can we hear Honourable Marilo? I didn't see any hands.
No, thanks, Chair. Just a brief comment in relation to the updated case. I think we should, as a portfolio committee, welcome the level of preparation for the portfolio committee and for the public hearing, and also for, in a short period of time, taking this topical matter to the public to be commended. But we are also deeply encouraged and heartened by the cooperation and the change that is taken from the department. I think with that kind of I think we are starting on the right note. While we will play our oversight role, but we must always give credit where it is due, and I think that should be what is going to underpin our outlook and our posture. But the cooperation is highly appreciated, and also that the stakeholders are enthusiastic and looking forward. So it is for us as members not to disappoint, but to be there and engage the association. But we thank you for yourself for the leadership, but this is the topical issue, the heartbeat of communities. So we are capturing the imagination around environmental nature, where they are not going to the abstract level, but at concrete level. We thank you. I think we also extend our thanks to the Minister and the Secretary. And thank you for the mission. Thanks.
On the issue of publicity, we're having a press conference tomorrow. At 10 o'clock, we have a statement ready. We'll speak to these issues, but of course we also have a plan to put some adverts on some newspapers local or provincial newspapers and the national newspapers. Not as a department, it's a parliamentary exercise. So that's what we're planning. On top of that, colleagues, maybe we should have made available the poster that we have sent to the provinces. There are posters that are with provinces as we speak now, and pamphlets that are with provinces, so that, but I think it is so that the colleagues have a sense of what is in those posters and pamphlets. So it should be that we can make them available to members. Maybe it could be an oversight on our part. But indeed, you are a correct member. Yes, we can't do these things without also engaging with the media. So indeed, there is a media plan. Of course, there is also an administrative team here in Parliament that assists with these matters that reports to the chair. So I'm quite happy with how far we have gone. But that yes, Deputy Minister.
A very brief but important aspect, as far as I know, is that please, where possible, let's try and engage on these issues in the language that people best understand. You know, our people don't respond and they don't assist us in some of these things because they don't know what is going on. So where possible, I know it could be a bit, but I'm just saying where possible. Thanks.
Deputy Minister, is not where possible. In all our public hearings, we'll be having translation that is relevant to that community. We know, for instance, that's why the team that we have at national level here consists of our language services here, and also your communication and all these things, your supply chain, you name it. But indeed, we can assure you, David, that in KZN we have interpretations in Zulu. In Mpumalanga we'll have interpretations in Bambela, in Swati, in Bushbuckridge, in Tsonga, in Northwest, in Tswana. So, indeed, because it will be pointless for us to go there and make presentations in English and think that we got through to our people. They're not English. Not their first language. So that matter, even at our logistics arrangement, is being attended to. And thanks for raising it, Deputy Minister. Colleagues, that finished the item that was not on the agenda. We now get on the item. Where's your agenda items? Okay, you tell us which one is that with Green Sustainable Development or second commitment on the Kyoto Protocol. Which ones? Because I will take both at any rate. Here. And this is the only screen. So I must leave here and come there. Okay. All right. Oh, there's more of this one. Thank you very much. We then hand over to you, Minister, and your team to take us through. Maybe Minister can just talk to what is this broadly, politically, what is this second commitment to the Kyoto Protocol, so that as we go into details, at least we have a take. What is this, Minister?
Yes, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues, just to particularly thank you for entertaining and engaging on this matter of the KP, acceding to the KP. It is a very, very important piece of work politically in South Africa and internationally. We have worked very hard as South Africa, and I'm starting on the recent, and in the presentation they will talk to the advantages and issues. You recall that the Kyoto Protocol second commitment here was agreed to here in South Africa on our soil after having been a problem to resolve in Cancun in particular. It is one of the deliverables that was attained as a political issue in South Africa, together with the need for us to begin to work away from the two tracks negotiation into one single track of attaining a legally binding or legal instrument. And the third one also obviously deal with issues of ensuring that we increase the ambition so that we are not in disaster situation and meet our obligations as a result of ensuring that we have a below 2 degrees Celsius carbon emissions, research-based issues. I thought that we should have a discussion on this. It's going to be a very, very brief discussion. Although we are not quite members, we are required to accede to this sort of protocol because we require a certain number of percentage, which I will speak to, or parties of the UN, the UNFCCC, for this to become a reality and actually get enforced. And as South Africa, we are probably one of the first few countries to accede to it and to do deal with this amendment. We are awaiting other countries. It's important that as we get to the negotiations later this year in Lima, there's an indication that all parties have actually acceded, or at least they require certification. It was agreed into in South Africa, it was ratified, or it was turned into a resolution in Qatar at COP18. So I think it's interesting to see how this resolution was arrived at. It was not an easy thing, and I think it's important. We do think that this is something that we have to have in the President's statement in at the Kunga UN General Assembly, which will be sitting this month, for announcement by South Africa that we have really ratified access to this extension, the amendment of the DP. So without any waste of time, I'll ask that Didi, who's presenting it, I'll do the presentation. It's really very brief, but it's an important thing.
Thank you, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The purpose of this is to just highlight the reason why South Africa needs to ratify this amendment to the Kyoto Protocol. Next slide, and the next. In essence, as we discussed in detail with Judy Beaumont last week or the week before, I can't remember, South Africa's national interest is that we need a global climate change regime that minimizes the impact of climate change globally, but in particular because we're extremely vulnerable to its impacts. We also have an interest in maintaining a stance that gives us development space, if you want. So while we need...
Sorry. Honourable members, do we have this document?
Okay,
fine. Yeah, as long as we have the document.
So it's in our interest to maintain, within the context of the international climate change regime, the development space for South Africa. So for us to take on a Kyoto type of legal, internationally legally binding commitment under the Kyoto Protocol would actually restrict us as a developing country. But nevertheless, we need to be part of the bigger regime in a fair manner and an equitable manner that takes into account our national circumstance. And part of that regime needs to be supporting developing countries in their efforts to make a fair contribution to the global effort. Recalling that to address climate change, no single country can act and address climate change. This requires a global solution. This requires all parties to contribute to the global solution. Next slide. And in that context, it's in our interest for the climate change regime to be a rule-based binding regime which is equitable. And the deal that we made in Durban, the Durban deal, if you want, actually comprised three elements. It comprised, on the one hand, a transitional arrangement, which is an arrangement between 2012 and 2020 for actions to be taken by developing countries, what we call NAMAS, nationally appropriate mitigation actions to be taken by developing countries, for developed countries that are willing to join the second commitment period under the Kyoto Protocol, for them to put legally binding commitments under the Kyoto Protocol. And for those developed countries which are not prepared to join the second commitment period of Kyoto Protocol to take comparable quantified and economy-wide emission reduction commitments under the convention. So it's like a three-track process on mitigation in the period between 2012 and 2020. Second part of the deal was to negotiate a post-2020 system which is applicable to all of us, that we need to finish by Paris. And the third part of the deal is to address the current inadequate levels of ambition in the period 2012 to 2020, which also has a deadline of 2015. So there's an expectation that developed countries that join the second commitment period under Kyoto will ratchet up their level of their commitment in Paris or by Paris. So you'll see in the notes, in the detail when you read that, the table of commitments are underpinned with certain countries indicating that they could, based on progress with a bigger regime, they could increase that level of ambition, Norway and others. But you'll read that, you can read that detail. So, next slide. So, in essence, basically what this amendment does is it gives what we call a second commitment period under Kyoto Protocol, which is 8 years long. It lasts from 2012 to 2020. And it requires, the problem is that for it to come into legal force, it requires three-quarters of all countries to ratify. Three-quarters of all countries that are signatories or that have ratified the Kyoto Protocol ratify. And if you recall, there's only, out of all the parties that belong to the Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC, only one did not ratify the Kyoto Protocol, and that's the USA. So in essence, there's 198 countries that belong to the Framework Convention and 197 that belong to Kyoto. So we require three-quarters of 197 to ratify, which we are part of. So if we want to, in essence, if we want to have a rules-based, legally binding regime in the period 2012 to 2020, then we need to become a ratifier. Next slide. So in essence, this amendment's got three parts. The first part is Annex B, which is the list of countries that are intending on taking on a second commitment period under Kyoto, with quantified emission limitation or reduction commitments, what we call QALPs, but those are not going to last for long. Then we've, under Annex A of the Kyoto Protocol, we've added NF3, nitrogen trifluoride, as a new gas. So there were Kyoto previously controlled six gases, it now controls seven. And then we had a problem as developing countries, that countries that that had what we call hot air under the Kyoto Protocol. So basically what happened is that the Soviet Union, when it collapsed, its economy collapsed. And as its economy collapsed, those emissions went down. and it reduced after the fall of the Berlin Wall by 1992 or so. There were 49% below 1990 levels. But they only put a target of 5% reduction below 1990. So they had this gap between 5% and 49%, which is hot air, which they retain ownership of. And remember, under Kyoto, the market mechanism, so that hot air has got monetary value. And we had a problem that they wanted to carry over the hot air from the first commitment period to the second commitment period. And so basically what it does do is the amendment to Article 3 of the limits that carry hot air carry over. The advantages for South Africa to do this is that it creates a legal commitment for developed countries and maintains, more importantly than the ambition, is that it maintains the rule set for internationally legally binding commitments, which we hope will carry over into the post-2020 regime. So we don't want to lose the rules associated with an internationally binding commitment, and that's why it's so important to keep Kyoto alive pre-2020. The second benefit is that linked to the Kyoto emission trading mechanisms, or what we call flexible mechanisms, is a 2% levy on all trading that gets done, which goes into an adaptation fund, which is used for least developed countries, small island states, and other developing countries to fund their adaptation. So keeping Kyoto alive in the second commitment period, you're keeping that levy, that flow of revenue into the adaptation fund. And the third advantage is to keep the clean development mechanism under Kyoto, which is a mechanism whereby a developed country can invest in a sustainable development project that's low carbon in their country and get an offset. So it's an offset from between a developed and a developing country. So those are the advantages of acceptance for South Africa. Yeah, no, that's fine. Next slide. And in that context, we're recommending that the National Assembly accept and ratify the Doha Amendment to the Kyoto Protocol. Thank you.
There we are, colleagues. I had a teacher in one of my learning areas who would always say, as care as much. We are now in your capable hands. Here is a clear recommendation. There was a political input made by the minister. Basically, if South Africa wants to be part of those who are taken serious on taking the matter of climate change forward, then there are certain natural obligations that fall on us. Among some of the obligations is, what do we do with the ratification of this second commitment? And that will be a clear indicator of whether we are indicating right and turning left. But as the minister also said, what kept Kyoto alive was COP17 here. Was it COP17? Mm-hmm. COP17 here. In that there were all attempts to kill Kyoto, but we kept it alive through the Durban platform as South Africa. I'm just saying all those things without influencing you. You are here, I've got my own views, but I can't put them before you put yours. Can we hear what members are saying? Yes, there is a clear recommendation that we accept, and then we comment to the National Assembly to accept these amendments to the Kyoto Protocol. Anyone wants to start speaking? Bob, Kulmura. Okay. My ship, do you want to speak? Okay, no one wants to speak. If we don't want to speak, then we... But as they would normally say, silence is consent. Now, I don't want to take it that way. Mabido, Kulmaba.
No, sir, as you clearly said, it's quite clear, and I think there's a bit of a mystery.
very, very we are one of the countries that acceded to the issues at hand. Now, I think the recommendations are clear. Maybe before I move to the recommendations, I understand that developing countries are also, you know, following suit. But I just want to say, what is the issue around Africa? I know I've lost track, but is Africa and started in relation to this? Because the Minister said, well, one of the countries. I just want to clarify, on SADC and Africa as a whole, are they on board? Because one, yeah, are they on board? And then after that, I just recommend, I mean, second the recommendation.
Anyone to speak on Africa and SADC?
I think Africa will fill in about what is currently happening at the African negotiators level, even met recently, just to indicate how many of African brothers would be going in the direction. But it is important to indicate that this is actually one of the most important set of agreements that Africa was pushing at COP17 itself, and even at Doha post at COP18. We are all very happy as the African continent, brothers and sisters, members of parties, that this was agreed to the second consent either. For the very same reason that Ms. Wills was talking to us, really about the need for us to retain rules-based systems, rule-based, because if we hadn't had Kyoto, we were going to just be beginning to negotiate right from the onset issues about the benefits on the finances that are getting into some coffers, and also helping with the adaptation, main event, and adaptation is very key for the African continent. As we get into those projects in a big way, we want to, because we believe that if we only continue to mitigate and not ensure adaptation, we will perpetually chase a moving target. So it's important that we have adaptation also in the meantime implemented. So just to give you an indication about how many of us, but we do know that. I also think, by the way, that Africa is one of the groups of the world that actually negotiates at all times with one voice. Our negotiators act together, and they also act together. I think they are able also to pull the G77 plus China together. You know, that's one group that's very solid. So we have no doubt that they would be supporting this as well. In terms of ratification, I'm just not sure how far they are. This is actually an exercise that involves us consulting, even with the public out there first, and then getting to the systems of cabinet. Ours has been into cabinet already. So we're not most of the time moving at the same speed.
I just wanted to find out, you mentioned that the USA did not want to sign the agreement, and that there are 179 countries to the UNFCCC, is that correct? 198, okay. So there are 198 signatories in total to the UNFCCC, and only the USA didn't want to sign. Okay. Chair, my second question is why South Africa does not appear on the Annex B? Has our carbon emissions not been quantified yet? Haven't we got any specific emission commitments ourselves? But otherwise, in terms of the amendments, I don't see any problem to that. Thank you, Chair.
If colleagues can, well, there's always been a political issue before they even respond on Kyoto. These are the Kyoto protocols, these are the USA. From the onset, that the point that was being made, from the onset, the first commitments to the Kyoto protocol, the USA refused to ratify. ratify, yes, the Kyoto, the first commitments under Kyoto Protocol. There might be varied reasons. Some might be economic, some might be political, some might be someone and people wanting to retain their leadership role of the world environment by hook or crook. In fact, these are some of the issues that the developing countries were quite unhappy with when it comes to the United States of America, because they are one of the serious emitters, and for them to refuse to deal with the world problem, it was just unthinkable. But that is reality, they refuse. But I think the indication now is that we must bring everybody on board, including those who might not have been signatories or might not have ratified the first commitments. Let's do everything between Lima and Paris so that as we deal with this matter, we deal with it as the entire world. And I think that has been the standpoint of South Africa. But do you want to speak to it, Chris?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to elaborate, my understanding, Honourable Mabido, is that all African countries have launched the process of ratification. At this point in time, my understanding it is only China who has ratified this amendment. But apparently the Chinese legal system is very rapid. They can make decisions like that very quickly. They don't have the kinds of processes that others have. And also just to note, remember that the Kyoto, the rule set that we are on to protect under Kyoto was adopted in Marrakesh in Africa. It's called the Marrakesh Accords. And that's the rule set that we want to preserve. On the US, if you see on page 20 of the actual protocol that you have, it's Annex B for the first commitment period, you'll see that the USA signed the killer protocol and subsequently refused to ratify it, having signed it. But they have a commitment, theoretical commitment under killer protocol. Yeah. But they did not ratify, so they are not legally bound by that number. And in actual fact, their actual performance was instead of 93% of 1990 levels, so in other words, a 7% reduction, they actually increased by 16% in actual real terms. So in that's actual performance. And so they're not willing to bind themselves in this manner. The reason why South Africa and China and Brazil and other developing countries are not part of the Annex B is that the system that the Kyoto Protocol set up was for those countries with the capability and the historical responsibility, they would take on these legally binding quantified targets and then introduce these what we call flexibility mechanisms, but the three trading mechanisms. And it created a system whereby developed countries could invest in developing countries and achieve global reductions. Now, because the U.S. didn't join Kyoto, that upset that system, upset that balance system. And so what we're negotiating now for beyond 2020 is a system which is applicable to all, which creates some kind of a risk for South Africa to be selling our low-hanging fruit for developed countries to achieve their compliance targets. So we just need to be very careful in the beyond 2020 system about what kind of commitments we take on. So we do have commitments under the convention, but we don't have commitments under the Kyoto Protocol. So we have commitments under the convention, which is our 34% deviation by 2020 and 42% by 2025. So we've got a relative commitment, not an absolute commitment, and developed countries have an absolute commitment, legally binding commitment. Just to note, Chair, it's a misnomer to say that our commitment under the convention is voluntary. It's not voluntary. It's binding. If you read in the convention under Article 4.1, it says all parties shall, not may or if they want to, you know, shall. So we have commitments under the convention, but we don't have commitments under the Kyoto system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Minister, you wanted to add something?
Just to say that this is, by the way, what we still call it, a two-track system, which we are now negotiating into this one single, fair, legally binding, what you call it,
enforceable
regime, with all those on it. Fair, ambitious, and binding for all. They must be for all at the end. So there's no use that can come. There is a reason why, well, it's not a reason, we can't answer that reason for them. But we hear that the Congress of U.S. will not allow at the time the party, the executive, would not ratify, was not agreeing to ratify, not the Congress. That's the reason they are dancing. But for a while, they've been going on like this. For the first time, we had U.S., by the way, here in South Africa, agreeing to negotiate for agreement by 2015, which is one single agreement for all, fair and so on, with a legal force, or what do they call it? The legal force, an instrument with legal force. For the first time, we could get them agreeing to using that kind of language. And we do hope that they will stay under their word, and as we continue to negotiate, trying to find mechanism to build this legal instrument issue. What form should that be? So that we can then be all in it. The last thing I thought I should mention, Chair, before you move on, and I was conversing with Alfie, I'm sorry about the postscript issue, it's on the explanatory memorandum in our documents. I just thought that it is important to highlight the role that was played by South Africa in the agreeing the world resolving on this second commitment of KP. Here we are referring to, if you read that one big paragraph, it talks to the protocol that was amended, I'm reading in the middle, that was amended in 2012 to provide for the second commitment period by the adoption of the Doha amendment to the protocol. It is an adoption that was made in Doha. Doha was adopting the actual implementation of the protocol. That's what countries were now signing. You remember us set up in the middle of the hall because it took us a while. With EU member states, you know, two of them not agreeing. They deposited one, and two of them were not quite agreed. It took some time to negotiate in the circle on the floor of the conference to get them to do that. So that was the agreement. But there was a problem, yes, it was, about four. Mainly for Poland, is it? Poland, yeah. And Russia. So I think we need to just say something here about the protocol having been agreed to in South Africa, the resolution having been made in South Africa. Thank you. Wedding, I think we can find. Thanks. No. Jealous, I just don't want to lose the South African because this is really what's agreed here.
I think that will only be fair to us if the discussions and the agreements started on this path, started in South Africa, let's say so. And indeed, the signing thereof then happened in Doha. No, we have no problem with it. But we will also want to be jealous about the role that we have played, so that our explanatory memorandum is able to illustrate the role that South Africa has played or what was achieved under our soil. Yeah. Correct. That's where we are. I'm not hearing anybody who says no from the members of parliament over here. And I heard Madilo, Honorable Madilo, saying he will move. Now we gave her the opportunity to do so. Sir.
No, Honorable Chairperson, I formally move that we accept the recommendation for the motivation given an explanation, background, and product. Thank you.
Put otherwise, Mabilo moves that as the committee, we recommend to the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa to ratify the second commitment on the Kyoto Protocol. At least we now have a sense of what this second commitment is. Any second? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, I mean, the clarification from the Minister in regards to the explanatory memorandum. I can safely say I'm convinced that we need an to support the recommendations from yes, maybe considering, I mean, that as a country we have to do something, especially when it comes to development. Thank you.
DA, you want to add your voice? The honourable member is from the NFT. DA, you want to add your voice? He must speak. Speak, Gebaro. You must not say we did not give an opportunity.
I'm going to make a recommendation and
That concludes our first item. We are all agreed that we will recommend to Parliament. Of course, we can only do so when the matter is before us. But we'll be ready. We'll be ready. Therefore, we don't need to come back again. We'll just take from our minutes and then recommend Parliament that we ratify the second commitment to the Kyoto Protocol.
Honourable Chair, sorry, just a technical note for the parliamentary law legal advisers. They must just find out whether we would be acceding or ratifying, depending on whether or not the amendment is still open and you're for signature. If it's open for signature, my understanding is we ratify. If it's closed for signature, we accede. But it's a legal technicality just for your process here in Parliament.
Okay. Yeah. It's a war. Okay. We hear you. But but at any rate, we are giving it our nod. If then the time to sign would have been closed, but then we will do what then is supposed to be done. But we are giving it our nod. Whatever it is that you call that nod in your wonderful negotiation English. Negotiated English. Or ratify, yes. Thank you very much. Can you then get to the second item? The second item, I don't know whether colleague is... What's the time now? About 10. Okay. I was just asking administration to check us to check whatever that is there. But I know we have just had tea. So we will okay. So we will then continue with the another important subject matter, sustainable development goals. Thank you very much. Who starts? Is it your minister who or deputy who introduces the subject matter?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We will be presenting this sustainable development goals for discussion today and much today, because we have to engage South Africans on the sustainable development goals. Just to say this, the 2015 marks the end of the term, not the death quite, of the MDGs, but the end of the term of implementation of the Millennium Development Goals, because parties committed themselves to implement the Millennium Development Goals, ensure that we succeed in all the Millennium Development Goals by the year 2015. So the question has been that post-2015, what then happens? The world then started preparing under the UN, the Secretary General's office and the entire team of UN, for this sustainable development, or let me say a new regime of set of development goals that are to be set up. We know the history of the previous Millennium Development Goals. They were announced, so to speak, or just it wasn't a process like what we're going through right now, but they came as a package, and the Secretary General introduced and the world agreed to them. This time around, parties said at the Rio+20 that there is a need for us to have a discussion on what kind of development goals are we going to have. We're calling them sustainable development goals because this is actually a term coined already at the time we left Rio+20 and Rio de Janeiro 2 years ago. The issue here is that these sustainable development goals, we see them as goals that do not necessarily have to bring to an end some of the development goals that we have had under the MDGs. Very important point, which we state as South Africa, and this is our position. For instance, goals like your poverty goal should still be pronounced, because the world hasn't dealt with poverty eradication completely, so we cannot see this goal just vanishing. We're stating this because there were some attempts from some quarters, we're stating some political issues as well, by the way. Some attempts from some quarters that were saying, let's have goals like energy for all. If you deal with energy for all, everybody who is poor, once they have energy, once they have jobs, once they have whatever, poverty will come to an end. So we don't think that's the way you're working, by throwing the big issues on poverty. There's got to be elements and real serious efforts on poverty itself as a goal. So these are some of the things that we have maintained and sustained. Again, it has been a position of the Africa Group, and it still continues to be a position of the Africa Group. So the consultation process started. We are now at a stage where a discussion that will sit at UNGA, or parallel to UNGA, it's a parallel version, at the United Nations General Assembly that is this month. And that parallel session will discuss among this issue of the Sustainable Development Goals. There has been consultations. The Secretary General has set up a panel, and that panel included us as South Africa as well at the time. And the panel was co-chaired by our president together with the Prime Minister, Finland. And it has positions some set of considerations which parties have been needing to work on. And this is what we have today. For our committee chair, it is going to be important that we find a mechanism to link up with other portfolio committees. I don't know how, because the sustainable development goals, while they are based on our natural resources as a base that has to serve the base and movement away or base for development of everything, the people and the economy. This being the base, there are other specific development goals like education, like health, like whatever, and those are cross-cutting with agriculture and so on, cross-cutting with other departments. ERCO is a partner, we are working with them as well, and I don't know at parliamentary level who is really championing this, but our suggestion is that this is the home for this discussion in this portfolio committee as well as with ERCO, in partnership with ERCO, but also consulting with others because they are about their mandates that are legally given to those particular sectors of our government and our parliament as well as the people. So, lastly, I think what is expected, therefore, is that as we arrive at the discussions with the Secretary General Summit, where these matters will be discussed, the matters are going to be put there, and that's where we then have an adoption of this or otherwise, this work that was processed by various parties, and then have a beginning of a discussion on a zero paper, which will lead into next year, 2015. By that time, we need to have adopted whatever comes out as our sustainable development goals, and then move on to begin to implement. So in actual, that's the process and how we... I think I'll ask the Olin to quickly lead this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Good morning, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. I'm just going to take us through briefly the SDG regime, where we are coming from. Minister has already started to action.
Just 10 minutes. Now, you see, other people who make presentations, they take it for granted that we know them. Others do introduce themselves, what they are, what they do. Because it doesn't follow that we know who's speaking.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Kaula Maru from the Department of Environmental Affairs, and I'm coordinating sustainable development within the department. Having said that, Chair, in terms of the presentation outline, I will provide a brief background on the sustainable development regimes and the real outcomes which fashion the development of these SDG sustainable development goals. And I will highlight briefly on the proposed sustainable development goals, the key principles that underpin the development of these goals and the preparatory process going forward, as well as the recommendations. Next slide. On the sustainable development regime, I think I just wanted to highlight the chronology of where the international community is coming from in terms of sustainable development. In 1992, the UN Conference on the Human and Environment was the first conference that considered environment and development, and so the need to address both in a mutually beneficial way. But in 1992, at the Rio Summit, the international community adopted Agenda 21, which is a blueprint for sustainable development, and it has as well backed the three key conventions, one being the United Nations Conventions on Biodiversity, the United Nations Conventions on to Combat Degradation, as well as the UNFCCC, that is the Climate Change Convention. Following that, in 2000, we had the Millennium Summit that adopted the MDG, the Millennium Development Goals, which most of them have been targeted for 2015. And in 2002, here in South Africa, we hosted the World Summit on Sustainable Development, which produced the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation, which has been viewed as a plan to implement Agenda 21. And in 2012 at Rio, we, of course, adopted an outcome called the Future We Want, where we look at the green economy for sustainable development and institutional framework for the attainment of sustainable development. And this conference, I think, was a great milestone in a sense that it started to bring into play most of the emerging issues that were coming within the sustainable development agenda. And next year, 2015, would mark the target for MDG and will start marking the new process in terms of the new agenda, the new regime that the international community will focus on. Just briefly, in terms of the Rio Plus 20 outcomes, which of course adopted the document entitled The Future We Want, in paragraph 245,
2251, it focuses on the development of sustainable development goals.
Sorry, just so that before you move on, we have been reading about Rio Plus 20. What is this Plus 20? We know of the place called the Rio de Janeiro. What is this Rio Plus 20?
Thank you, Chair. Rio Plus 20 was the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, which marked the 20-year anniversary of the first conference that was convened in Brazil in 1992, which produced Agenda 21 as the blueprint for the international community to move towards the attainment of Sustainable Development Agenda. Rio Plus 10 was in 2002, World Summit on Sustainable Development in South Africa, which adopted Johannesburg Plan of Implementation, which has been viewed as a plan to implement the broader Agenda 21. And I think they are just putting them in short name to say it marks the 10th anniversary. So in the future, we might have Rio Plus 30 and Rio Plus 40, or Joburg Plus 20. So it depends who will be bidden to host. Thank you, Chair. And in terms of the Rio Plus 20 outcome, that's where we have discussed, as indicated, the green economy as one of the critical emerging issues as a tool to achieve sustainable development. We have discussed the institutional framework, how can we enhance the institution to support the country's to achieve sustainable development agenda. But most importantly, we discussed the sustainable development goals. And member states agreed that there should be building blocks that should guide the development of these sustainable development goals. One such was the Agenda 21. It was agreed that the building blocks should include Agenda 21 and the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation. It was agreed that the goals should fully respect all the Rio principles. And I think one of the key principles is common but differentiated responsibility that members might have heard about both in the climate change discussion and in many engagements. And it was agreed that this should contribute to a full implementation of the outcomes of all major summits in the economic, social, and environmental field. Ministers already alluded about the protracted nature of sustainable development. It has the economic, the social, and the environmental dimension. So it was said that it would be proper for the sustainable development goals to cut across and draw from those major outcomes of those major summits. Furthermore, it was agreed that they have to be consistent with the international law and they should build upon the commitment already made. And there was an outcry mainly from developing nations to say we don't want to start from a vacuum. We should start from a number of commitments that has already been made. It was agreed that the goals should incorporate in a balanced way the three dimensions of sustainable development, which is the economic, the social, and the environmental dimension, and ensure their interlinkages. And it was agreed that they have to be coherent with and be integrated into the United Nations Development Agenda beyond 2015. I think, Honorable Member, here I just want to emphasize that the process with regard to beyond 2015 Development Agenda will be elaborated in the coming General Assembly. However, the Sustainable Development Goals would be one of the key integral documents that will inform the agenda beyond 2015. It was agreed that this process should not divert focus or effort from achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. Countries were called upon to continue working hard towards the attainment of the MDG, hence we are working on the development of the new agenda. And it was agreed that the process should be a participatory process which should include active involvement of all relevant stakeholders in the process, academia, governments, science, and a number of stakeholders. All key stakeholders have to participate in the development of the goal, of this SDG goals. And the goals should be action-oriented, they should be concise, and it should be easy to communicate. And I think one of the key things was just drawing from the MDG in terms of their conciseness, in terms of their easy to communicate. So they say, well, let's draw from the MDG and ensure that these goals are quite easy to communicate. And they have to be limited in number, aspirational, and global in nature. Following that, a 30-member open working group was agreed upon and was adopted at the General Assembly, was established by the General Assembly to prepare a proposal on the SDG. The document that we are having
is a document that has been developed through this open working group that has been established, and I'll just touch briefly on the organizational work of the working group, how it was structured. And first, it was structured in two phases, and the first phase was largely to look at the main themes and to draw from, you know, the various perspectives, get input and views from member state and range of stakeholders. And it was through this first phase where we have seen the general commissioning a number of studies, a number of reports that will inform the basis of developing this FDG. And following that process, the second phase entails the preparation of the reports, which will then be tabled at the coming session at the United Nations General Assembly in September. The report contains, we call it a zero draft. It contains 17 goals in total with 169 targets. Just very briefly, in terms of the goals that have been proposed, I'm not going to go into details in terms of their targets. We circulated the draft as is. The first goal focuses on ending poverty in all its forms, and I think this is one of the calls from developing nations to say poverty eradication should remain the overarching objective of our attainment sustainable development, and we've seen that in terms of the first goal. And the second goal focuses around ending hunger, achieve food security, improve nutrition, and promote sustainable agriculture. Some of the targets include the whole issue of ending malnutrition and ensuring that poverty is also addressed. And the third goal focuses largely around ensuring healthy lives and promote the well-being of all, at all ages. This includes also the issues of addressing HIV, AIDS, tuberculosis, and diseases such as that. And the fourth goal focuses on ensuring inclusive and equitable quality education and promote lifelong learning opportunities for all. And I think Honorable Member might observe that one of the things that's coming quite strongly is the whole issue of quality education. When in comparison with the MDG, it has moved from just access, but it is now moving towards the whole issue of quality. The fifth one focuses around achieving gender equality, empower women and girls. And the sixth focuses around ensuring availability and sustainable management of our water and sanitation for all. The whole issue of access to safe drinking water, access to sanitation, is one of the targets that are elaborated in this goal. The seventh goal focuses on ensuring access to affordable, reliable, sustainable and modern energy for all. This focuses on targets such as energy efficiency and the renewable energy. And the eighth goal focuses on promoting sustained, inclusive, sustainable economic growth, full and productive employment, decent work for all. And I will say this is one of the elements that has been pushed by developing nations, because within the multilateral space, many developed nations, they don't want to see anything that has to do with inclusive, because inclusive then points to the participation of, you know, all the stakeholders, participation of people who are unemployed as well. The ninth goal focuses largely on building resilient infrastructure, promote inclusive and sustainable industrialization, and foster innovation. And the 10th goal focuses on reducing inequality within and among countries, and one of the key elements that are covered there around the whole issue of official assistance, the financial flow to ensure that there's investment in most developing countries. The 11th goal focuses largely around making cities and human settlement inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable. And the 12th goal focuses around the implementation of the global sustainable consumption and production framework, which has been adopted as well at Rio, which focuses largely on the following thematic area. One is the consumer information, to ensure that your consumers are informed of what they consume, so that we can make, you know, wise choices. The whole issue of sustainable lifestyle, sustainable procurement, and of course the whole issue of capacity building. The 13th goal focuses again on taking action to combat climate change and its impact. And there's a caveat on this one indicating that we are aware that there's ongoing engagement within the UNFCCC, and in essence, the discussion around climate change has to, in essence, take place within the UNFCCC. Hence, the goals and the targets there are quite very generic targets. The 14th goal focuses around conserved and sustainable use of the ocean, seas, and the marine resources for sustainable development. As the 15th goal focuses around the protection, restoration, and the promote of sustainable use of our terrestrial ecosystems. The 16th goal would focus around promote peace and inclusive society for sustainable development, provide access to justice for all, and build effective, accountable, and inclusive institutions at all levels. The 17th goal, one of the key things, honorable members, that was coming in the discussion of the SDG was you cannot have the SDG and not have the means to implement it. So you need to complement the goals with the means to implement it. Hence, the 17th goal focuses largely around strengthening the means of implementation, which focuses on building global partnership for sustainable development, focuses around financing and resources for sustainable development, facilitating technology transfer, particularly for developing nations, assistance in terms of capacity building, trade, as well as the systemic issues that include the whole issue of policy, development policy and institutional coherence, multi-stakeholder partnership. As you would agree with me that sustainable development is not solemnly in the responsibility of government, you need business participation, you need all other stakeholders to participate, and the whole issue of data monitoring and evaluation of the processes. In terms of the key principles that underpin the development of these proposed goals, it was agreed at Rio to say the goal has to draw lessons learned from the Millennium Development Goals, and I've already alluded to some, include easy to communicate, and it was agreed again that they have to be specific, hence they are about 169 targets, so you need to make sure that the goals are very specific in terms of the actions, that they should be accompanied by the means of implementation, as I've already alluded to on goal number 17. But the critical thing was the emphasis of policy space for countries to ensure that countries have a policy space to implement, to enhance, to adjust their strategy in trying to implement this sustainable development goal. Poverty eradication remains one of the overarching objectives for sustainable development goals. In terms of the process going forward, honorable members, we have started in consultation with DECOR International Relations to work on to do an analysis on the working draft. So currently we had an intergovernmental engagement where we have started to analyze each and every goal and see what are the implications for us as a country, what are the arguments that we need to start formulating, what are the counter-arguments that we need to start putting in place, following which we are going to have a multi-stakeholder engagement so that we afford all stakeholders an opportunity to engage with the working draft and provide the necessary inputs. And of course, South Africa will participate in the coming session of the United Nations General Assembly, where the United Nations General Assembly will in essence elaborate on the process going forward. Because as Minister has already alluded, one of the outcry was this process has to be intergovernmental, it has to be a negotiated process, unlike the MDG, which was just a package which came down. So the session at the United Nations General Assembly will then elaborate on how, now that they have the report at their disposal, they will give us a clear direction, a clear guidance on how are we going to engage with the process going forward. And following that, I think we would then come back and formulate the South African position against each and every goal, so that when we start to negotiate, we are very clear on each and every goal, what is it that we want as a country, what is it that we have to guard against, and so forth. And of course, we'll facilitate approval of the position through cabinet, and we'll then participate with a cabinet mandate in a formal negotiations on the SDG. However, honorable members, I think I must just highlight that there is corridor talks within the multilateral system in New York that some developing nations are starting to repeat to say this text is a good text, it's a developmental text, it has poverty as one of the overarching goals, let's not be open it for negotiation. If there is that corridor talk, but what we are sure of is the U.S. and most developed nations would want to negotiate this text. Because as it was developed, the mandate of the working group was to put it before the General Assembly, and therefore it will be a text that it will be a base for negotiations. So I just want to highlight that, but in terms of our processes, we have accommodated that talk in terms of our preparations. To say either way, if it comes to us, we need to be prepared. In terms of the recommendation at this stage, we are just asking for the portfolio committee to note the process, but most importantly to engage with the document and provide input so that we can then start integrating them in the formulation of our position. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Does anybody know how to deal with the climate change here? Because it's quite cold inside here. It's quite cold where I am. Minister.
I don't know if I'm going to ambush though. But as part of the future we want decision, RioPlus20, there was also an agreement made, decisions made on the coordination structures going forward on this matter. I think it might be important to just also talk to those issues so that the portfolio committee members are aware. We no longer have both ECOSOC and all those proliferated and the CFDs and so on. So there's going to be some mechanism for coordination.
Thank you, Minister. In terms of the mechanisms, Minister, at RioPlus20, number of members might understand that we used to have the Commission, the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development, which used to coordinate our reporting, monitoring of our implementation of the targets that we agreed upon here in Johannesburg, in particular the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation. But going to Rio, there was a view that the structure is no longer relevant, mainly because one of the concerns was it's no longer being a political participation, where you are having a dwindling participation of ministers in the structure. And that is not really good for sustainable development agenda globally. It's not elevated. So it was then agreed that we abolish the CSD and replace it with a structure called the High Level Political Forum on Sustainable Development, which will draw from Minister from Economic, Ministry from Social, Ministry from Environment to ensure that there is coherence and there is political participation at the high level, which will convene in each and every year, convene ministerial meeting being convened each and every year, but in the third year there will be a heads of state where the heads of state will then convene and assess progress and elevate the sustainable development agenda. There is ongoing work in terms of the alignment, Minister, in the ECOSOC, the ongoing restructuring of ECOSOC. ECOSOC is a commission within the United Nations Central Assembly that is tasked in, you know, organizing the United Nations General Assembly. So there is ongoing review and adjustment within the ECOSOC, which will then be integrated within the high-level political forum. This high-level political forum will be convened back-to-back with the United Nations General Assembly so that we can then draw from the participation of the heads of state. So in essence, the thinking was, let's elevate sustainable development agenda globally to the highest political leadership from RioPlus20. Thank you, Minister.
That is quite an important detail. If we can include that in the presentation, that detail, coordination of this work worldwide, that we had this commission, now it has been changed to this high-level ministerial teams who will then, of course, they'll have to meet yearly, then they will have to be a report to presidents once in 3 years. That shows that the world is taking this development agenda seriously, elevating it to presidents and getting a high-level team of ministers who will be sealed with this work, with the implementation of the whatever that we agree on, ultimately. So I think this is quite an important detail. But again, so thanks a lot for our time. I think we now know what we are talking about. Members, it is before you. It is in your hands. That's what Madiba was saying. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Stana. Honourable Member, Stana. It's O.G.F.
Thank you, Mayor. Congratulations that this document has received such welcome input and being considered by global countries. I wanted to ask, were the SDGs based on our NDP? Because I see that there's a lot of referral 2020, 2030, etc. Is there alignment between this and the National Development Plan? Then I wanted to know, if we were to test ourselves today in terms of these sustainable development goals, what percentage would we get out of 100? Just so that we can understand how far we have to go. In the document you speak about a monitoring tool. I mean, because of course you need to monitor your progress between now and 2020 and 2030. And it speaks to a number of things that need to be measured. Has that been finalized? I also want to find out whether the goals and targets have any recommendations or steps that are going to get us there. And I understand that this document is being considered globally, so you know, the specifics are going to be different for each country. But certainly from a South African perspective, have we decided on the how? For example, by 2050, ensure that all youth and at least X percent of adults, both men and women, achieve literacy and numeracy. How are we going to ensure that we meet that target by 2030? So it's good to have goals, it's good to have targets, but then I think that South Africa, certainly if we are going to adopt this as our SDGs, we must have the how, which is why I was wondering whether the National Development Plan speaks to this. Ngiyabulela.
Ababuhate. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Interventions by members? Yes, yes, I remember.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just looking at the issue of alignment of linkages within the country, not looking outside. You see, the department seems to be involving other stakeholders, as the Minister has outlined that there is that a need. How are you going to see that the goal to be achieved is clearly explained to, especially to local municipalities where we have mayors? Because my experience is that we have a system in the local government where we have the IDP. But we do not have the monitoring whether departments in those provinces are attending to the IDP forums of municipalities to ensure that the service delivery for the department is easy to manage the performance. But for now, there are always complaints that a housing development cannot take place because the Department of Environment is not, responding accordingly. So that issue, sometimes Abanye Benza, example, there was a project where they said it could not start because kunama butterflies, so but in the department, so now, Minister, it's just the involvement when it comes to the IDP, which all mayor, they understand Uguti. It's good, but when it comes to the outcome or the real physical development on the ground, where city something about the Benefica Mall. How can you convince me within our country that this is going to assist in making delivery tangible to the people? Thank you.
Any other inputs from colleagues? Well, if there's none, if we can just get responses from our department.
Thanks. Let me take some, and Honourable Mr. will take others as well. I think in terms of alignment with the NDP, that for us demonstrates a strength of our planning systems and tools, because we had the NP prior to even engaging on these goals. So in terms of the preliminary inputs that we're giving to this process, we're informed largely by the NDP and informed by some of the strategies that we have within the country. So for me, it just demonstrates in essence the strength of the country's planning system. In terms of the monitoring and evaluation, I think what I want to emphasize is we normally have the MDG reports where we monitor our progress against the Millennium Development Goals. So we have those systems in place. When the targets change, all that is required is to ensure that you align the systems to the new targets. You don't have to go and try to build a new system. So we have those systems. I think we have a recent report which was produced last year, 2013, which in terms of percentage, it depends from one goal to the next, because we used to have only 8 goals, MDG goals, and now we are having 17. And there are those which we are doing well in terms of access to education, in terms of poverty eradication. If you can go through our MDG report that is produced by the South Africa, it clearly indicates where are we as a country. And but those which we are doing good, there are those which we are likely to achieve, because the target end is 2015. So those are some of the tools that will be used to measure that. And in terms of us internalizing the SDG minister, we are going to look at those reports, and we are going to look at our strategies and see what each goal means to our strategies and process. Does it mean that we have to align, enhance, or does it mean that we have to increase our capacity in certain areas, as it will differ from the various dimensions, economic, social, and environment, and we'll be engaging with all the ministries in terms of all these goals, in terms of analyzing this document and coming to a conclusion as to what is it that we are going to take to the negotiation table.
I'm trying to see, or you'll help me on the IDP and the local municipality. Okay, Minister.
Maybe before the CEO, I think what you are saying is that it's just a simple matter that our plans should talk to all other spheres of government, simply put. And also, I think that is precisely the role also of the NCOP, because they are the one that deal with provinces, just to check our provinces on the way. But your concern is simple and understandable, that our plans should talk to the different spheres of government. And I think we want to agree with you there. Thanks.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. I'm Lisa McCourt. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the Department of Environmental Affairs. And very complex to explain, but I'm actually overseeing the work that Tro is doing on sustainable development, even though he's working forward in my branch that I'm managing. I think what I want to just add in terms of the implementation and the NDP alignment is not an accident that it is like that, because the NDP is informed by the National Strategy for Sustainable Development. So what is in the National Development Plan, in the chapter around sustainable development, comes from the work that we've been doing since 1992, before that, through the National Strategy of Sustainable Development. And we as South Africa also have led quite a lot of the issues around the indicated development, etc., around that. Also important in terms of the report, if you look at the full outcome, the future we want, there is a need for an annual global sustainable development report. And the pro forma for that, or the first example of that, was tabled in the ECOSOC high-level political forum meeting that happened a couple of months ago. And there we're also starting to look at these indicators which is going to link to the reporting of the targets. For South Africa, in terms of where we do have goals that we have, those into the Millennium Development Goals, obviously the baseline from where we would be starting our measurement would be where we are with the Millennium Development Goals not currently. In terms of those new ones that was added, many of them are within either our State of Environment Reporting or in our Sustainable Development Strategy and Framework as indicators where we would then also be able to say this is our baseline measuring forward to the target going forward. How do we achieve it? I cannot respond to your specific example because that falls outside the mandate of the department. But I think again it's linked to both the National Strategy for Sustainable Development, which is given effect through the National Development Plan, and we currently need to see whether there is really a need to have a separate strategy outside of the medium-term strategic framework and the implementation plan that are underpinning the NDP. I think one of the other places that is important in that regard is to look at the whole regime of State of Environment Reporting and how that has both internationally as well as in our local legislative framework given that effect in terms of what do we measure, how frequently do we measure, and what is the commonalities in terms of that. Important though in terms of the global system being flexible and not too prescriptive in the how of implementation is this common but differentiated approach. So in terms of how we look at that, we need to have the policy space for the different countries with their different capacities and their different resources in order to respond to it. So the response will be common, but will be differentiated based on where the countries are in the development path. Just to add a little bit onto what the Deputy Minister indicated, I think the big thing around the IDP is what we now have in the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act, where we do now have that alignment at strategic spatial level right up front in the planning processes. So you could now already up front say this is an area of critical conservation importance and therefore development should not go into that area. Or ultimately what we often forget is this is an area that is so compromised by pollution. Chair and members, if you look at our urban patterns, you will see that the poorest of poor, even with government housing, is often located on the cheap land, which is right next to landfill sites, mine dumps, etc., or industrial areas, where it's really areas of compromised environment that is compromising their health. So we can also do that upfront now through the instrument that was passed last year into law, which is the Special Planning and Land Use Management Act, where all of these things are upfront. And then these delays and alignment that you are referring to should be eliminated through the different intergovernmental forums that is looking at that.
Thank you very much. I've been covered with the second question with how, but the first one was, where are we now? I understand that, you know, in some targets we might be further advanced and taking into consideration that we now have 17 targets as opposed to 8. But if we were to give ourselves a grade, what would it be? And, for example, if the NDP because some of these targets are set according to 2030. So if we are currently at 20% now, then we know that over the next 5 years, to achieve the 2020, we need to improve it at 20% per year for those things. So it's okay to be at 20% now. But, you know, if we need to keep track of this. So if we were to give ourselves an overall grade, are we at 10% or 20% or 30% towards achieving these sustainable goals by 2020 and 2030? In course.
Minister.
where shall I start? It's a little difficult to put a percentage mark on an imposition of Millennium Development Goals over the Sustainable Development Goals. In other words, what I understand the question to be seeking is that let us right now superimpose the performance on MDGs on what is still coming as SDGs. I see that China is shaking the head. But you say that is not the case, or my understanding of the question. Perhaps I should say this in response. Ndate Ramaru said that, I think it was last year, 2012, when we last reported on the MDGs, 2013. We don't have that report now. We may have to bring it, the South African report, to the United Nations, because we do report similar to this other report that we've got to give. And it's not only the Environment Department that does reports, it's abroad on the 8 goals, Millennium Development Goals. We may have to look at it just for us to be precise on what we say. My recollection, though, is that there are goals that we have met that we have surpassed by far. We take the goal on water. The Millennium Development Goal was saying half the number of people with access to water by 2015. In terms of our performance in South Africa, we know that we are on 94.2% of access. With challenges that we have on lack of infrastructure or non-functional infrastructure, that still puts us way above the 50%. Even if you have to subtract those who do not quite practically have water because of the non-functionality of the infrastructure that they have, that was supposed to give them the entire 92.4% water, and they're not getting it. Even if you have to subtract that, we have long surpassed 50%. Ours, you ask about our goals, where we put the goals later at home. At home, because we have passed the 50% that was required, having people without access to water by 2015. We also put our own goals. We are now chasing universal access versus the international access. So that where we stand, that was one goal. I'm aware that on health, mortality, child mortality. It has been reported recently that we have actually surpassed 50%. That's the required amount at the time. In fact, the age of let me not forget that direction, but never already passed, especially because you're now longer listening. We have already surpassed it. We can take them one by one. Education, access on education, we have made it. Energy, we have made it. So I want to suggest that for us to be able to answer this question correctly, we need to get back to this question and look at our own performance on the Millennium Development Goals. And therefore say, what is new goals? Those are 8, by the way. I'm saying, if we are to look at the 17, because the question said 17, if we are to look at the 17, we have to look at them, poverty, the one that is a sustainable development goal proposed, versus the Millennium Development Goal, or poverty. Because we've got to take them one by one. The one that was education compares with education of MDG. Compare energy of sustainable development goals with energy of Millennium Development Goals. Otherwise, if we take all of them, like the 17, and say what could be the percentage, it will be difficult to arrive at an answer. Now, but you can compare apples with apples and not superimpose. That's what I'll tend towards, overlay the other on the other and then get a percentage. An answer in a nutshell, in anticipation of that report coming before us, is that we have actually done well on the Millennium Development Goals. we have surpassed more of most of them. We are even chasing universal access on more of them. That does not end there. We have another role to play. A big role is to assist our colleagues on the continent, because on the continent there are many other countries that are still not supported the Millennium Development. I think where we're still struggling is on sanitation as South Africa, but we'll look at that report. There's no sanitation for water. It's water only. Oh yes, it's Johannesburg kind of implementation. It's not quite. Some of these things were put on our own as our own developers at home, whereas they are, even though they are not obviously. But yes, in a nutshell, the package one, let's look at it. It's quite interesting. That's all I can say. Sorry, last point. I have a subtle call for us to discuss the environmental impact assessment impact on development in the country. And that discussion, I think we did agree that we were going to start one day even look at how we are faring on the EIA. Just explain a bit what is happening and unpack it from the discussion and petition, and because we're saying that sometimes the environment department is talking about the butterflies when development is going to happen. So we need to look at, let's unpack that whole area of it, especially what we're doing in order for us to actually have improvement. It takes to tango so that we also see the other partner and how we're dealing with the ensuring that from an environmental point of view, as well as from a development point of view, those who are doing development, there is harmony in that direction. Our other tools that we are beginning to apply, that are in the law, that we have actually not had much implemented previously, but not putting everything on board in place. Because I think you answered it very well on the land use plan, planning, and also about the IDPs and DG elsewhere. But I think there's an underlying question that needs to be dealt with about the environmental impact assessment versus development. Thanks.
I hear you, Minister, but you will know that as we interact with the department in the various programs that are in the department, one of the programs are the enforcement ones. So within the program, this one will come in, obviously, so that we don't just treat it as a standalone. So within that program, I think we'll also be grappling with how the department now, in October, how the department has fared with the Auditor General. Again, an opportunity, because as we grapple with those, we'll be grappling with all the programs, how we have fared as a department, and what were areas where we could have done better, and what we intend doing. And so, at the end of September, I think as we deal with the annual report of the department and how the Auditor General has looked at it, we could then go back to that area as well. And let me just touch on one other area. You see, when the Millennium Development Goals were put before the United Nations General Assembly by the Secretary General, they were given a term of 15 years. They started in 2000 and they are ending, or their term of operation, and they will never end as contracts, but their term of operation ends next year. Therefore, it will go without saying that the timeline that we have put on the NDP coincides with what is now coming through the Sustainable Development Goals as timelines. Because obviously, having started with 15 years, it goes without saying that indeed whatever that you put as the World Development Agenda could also be given a timeline of 15 years, and that 15 years ends in 2030, when you take it from 2015. So I think it's a good coincidence for us, a wonderful coincidence for us, if the world will measure the agenda of development within these 15 years that are coming. We ourselves, South Africa, have put those 15 years long ago. on a number of issues through the instrument of the NDG. So I think it comes in handy for ourselves. Therefore, with or without, but of course we are a member of the Community of Nations. So with or without the SDGs, we are expected through our own instruments to do something in all areas of development. And by 2030, we must be coming back to our people saying, where are we? But now one has to come back to our people only. We also have to come back before the world body and say, what instruments are we putting in place to realize the achievements of the 17, or in fact 16 goals, because the other ones, it's 16 plus the other one that is overarching. That speaks to how can we be, what are the coordination mechanisms, finances, governance models, you name it. So I think we are better placed as South Africa with these proposals. Therefore, it would be foolhardy of us not to fully support them because they coincide with our broad developmental agenda as a nation, as a country. The entities that all of us have adopted, except a few, or one or two parties. Now, having said that, colleagues, if you still have things to say, you can raise your hand, because I wanted us to get to the end now, so that we don't stay here for the sake of staying. I think we have a full sense of what these SDGs are, what is the thinking within the corridors of the United Nations, and I think from where we are sitting, there is basically no contradiction between these SDGs and what we ourselves have put forward as a country through the NDP. Therefore, there should be no qualms on us in our negotiation stance, mandating and agreeing with our government on the stance that they have taken that line. Two, this consultation, you see, this matter is before the Portfolio Committee now. With it before us, we are not an end in ourselves. The Parliament of the Republic of South Africa has an obligation to involve the people of this country on whatever matters that affect them directly. And I can tell you, these matters that are now have been elevated to the level of the international community affect them directly. And therefore, I believe it would not be foolhardy, or it is not foolhardy of us to take these matters to our people for their endorsement. So that as you go, Mama Mulewa and your team, the negotiators, you don't only have a cabinet endorsement, but you have an endorsement of ordinary men and women of our country. Of course, they might add a few elements they have every right to. So that when you go there, you are emboldened and strengthened by the knowledge that, you know, it's not only the cabinet that has endorsed it, but it's also ordinary South Africans who think that this is a good development path for the world, for the entire world. So I think maybe it was good of us to think of taking this matter as well and noting it on the public hearings. But I think one issue that has been raised by our colleagues here, it's nice and good to go to our people and say, you see, there were things called MDGs. We must say broadly how far have we fared in the presentation on the MDGs, so that again, because we might be asked those questions. Yes, we hear there is a new thinking on how do we take forward the MDGs with the expiry date 2015 looming. But can you tell us, how did we fare? as a country. And indeed, there were 8 goals there. Indeed, without going into details, I think we can work that into the presentation slides. There were these MSDGs. This is how we fared on this. Of course, there are still difficulties in relation to this. And as a state, notwithstanding whether those MDGs will be worked into the SDGs, we still have a duty, because indeed we are called upon by the National Development Plan at any rate to improve lives of our people in all avenues and in all sectors of their well-being. So I was just thinking that perhaps if we can, in a very high level, put the how we fed relation. And I know, by the way, some of us have read the report. In the report that we sent to the United Nations, we did pretty well in many areas. Again, it has been an opportunity to report to our people how we have fared on these MDGs. So to serve to this public hearing on this matter will serve two purposes. First, reporting how we have fared. Secondly, how do we take forward the development agenda of the world as a world community.
Thank you, sir. That's all very well. So long as that progress is communicated in a way that shows, for example, if the Millennium Development Goal was to halve the number of people without access to water by 50%, then we have to have the starting figure. So when that Millennium Development Goal is instituted, we stood at 80%, for example. I don't know what it was. 38% had access to water. So between 38% and 100%, 50% would then be about 68-70%, and we have 94.2%. So there you can see that from what we started with and the target of halving by 50% and our achievement, there has been, you know, very, very good progress there. And if the goals can be set out in that way, that would be very helpful. Thank you, sir.
So, thank you, Chair. We will certainly book that into the presentation. I just want to also just mention that one of the big differences between the MDGs and the SDGs is that the MDGs have this 15 years maturity date, which the SDGs, there isn't an end date for it. So the dates, yeah, it would go on. Sustainable Development Goals, so the target will change over the time. And I think the other thing that is also important is that you will see that very few of the dates is exactly 2050. Because many, in order, because we have international instruments that set targets in themselves for the areas that are covered in these goals, the targets that are mentioned here come from those instruments. So if you look, for example, at the biodiversity targets, the biodiversity targets come from the Convention on Biodiversity. And similarly, in terms of gender equality, etc., the targets and the dates come from those instruments. It is important that we note that, because there is often a temptation to try and renegotiate some of these in the context of sustainable development goals now that have been negotiated in other forums. Now, in the SDGs, they make that point only in terms of climate change. We have requested that they also include that caveat in the other sustainable development goals where it is relevant, that you don't open negotiations in that context where there is a specific negotiation process around that. Members will also see that in the zero draft of the text, there seems to be some inconsistency in the numbering. There's a little A, B, and C in some instances, and that just is the nature of a zero text. So there's also even some duplication in some of those. On that basis, we think it's very unlikely that it will not be opened, because it is not a complete document that we can take as it is.
Colleagues, Minister has excused, she has to run to another important engagement now. But as you leave, we're almost done. Because this, by the way, I've not introduced the Deputy Minister for those who might not know her. Deputy Minister is Honourable Member Barbara Thompson, for those who might not know her. You're most welcome, Mama, most welcome. That basically deals with matters that we're supposed to deal with today, unless there are some clarity issues or questions that members would like to raise, then we are almost about to go to the House or to lunch before the House.
No, sir, I'm just checking. Alan says, Alan, whenever we have the name of the antenna, the recommendation, Shaham San and I. Lay a corner, can I'm not certain that recommendation committed to note the SDG process.
What do you know about Shelley?
You should not be feeling it in Kalwi, would say move, and somebody said, I'm wrong, I'm moving.
He moved, Baba, what do they note?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair. I propose we agree with the recommendation as proposed.
Thank you. I think it's seconded because we don't, of course, as amended. You'll remember that we have made some amendments. We have said colleagues must do certain things, MTGs, and what is the other thing that we talked to? The institutional arrangements, yes, with those amendments. But of course, we also just in addition, this presentation will also assist us with our public hearing, because you see, it's now before us. But of course, we can't make this presentation. This is a good part of being members of parliament. We facilitate that presentations are made in the public hearings. And because basically, it's you who want all of us to agree with you on this approach. And we are saying to you as parliament, now you see, finally you are spoken to us, but come and speak to other people as well, because we think it is important. Speak to people of this country, and we have made that platform available through something we call public hearings, which will be starting this coming week. So, therefore, we will also use these presentations for this purpose. Whilst we are on that one, Mabuto, and us and all those who made presentations, also the, what is the other one that is not, you, Julie Climate and Rhino Fundi, we need those presentations today. Because you see, those presentations need to go, or they test well, this evening. they need to be translated, and also the people that will be assisting us with interpretation also. So why don't we agree that first thing tomorrow morning, that gives you some time, though. But we have the presentation already. yes. Or the one that wasn't in English. That's a difficult one. Fine. See what you can do. Because you see, the other thing I want, because also the one issue that I've raised is that with climate change, it's good that we have got an overarching climate response policy. We must also satisfy ourselves as a country that the provinces are party to this and the municipalities, so that it is not only a matter that is elevated to a national department, because all of us must be involved in this, and that will also be the importance. How you work that into your presentation, I leave it into your capable hands, because efficient energy and whatever, some of these things we are seeing them, they should be happening at local municipal level. Whether they are happening or not, and whether your climate change response policy speaks to the involvement of these stakeholders within your capable hands. Because people will ask them, will ask these matters. And I don't think that we expect provinces not to have almost similar climate response policies that are tailor-made, but borrowing a lot from what you have. And also municipalities, I don't believe that they should not have policy frameworks that speak to climate change. Because if we don't do that, we might elect, let's agree on a binding agreement where the two tracks are narrowed into one at international level. The implementation thereof would obviously rely not only on the national department and other departments, but also on provincial departments and the local municipalities. We leave that headache to your wonderful self. Probably you have had that headache for some time now, but you'll have it more as you go to our communities there. Because our communities, you might be thinking local, but you must then, your implementation must be locally based. Zana?
Sorry, sir. I just wanted to confirm exactly when the SDGs replaced the
MDGs.
Those ones, ABCs and XYZs, we are not. I just wanted to know exactly when the transition
happens. Or it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. In terms of the process, it will kick in 2015. 2016 in essence, because, but it has to be adopted in the 2015 United Nations General Assembly to kick in the start of 2016. So these are just, now we are just in the process of elaborating these goals, which will be integral to the entire broad 2015, post-2015 development agenda.
Broadly, maybe we came on time. To interact with these matters, both the matter of the of this development agenda, but also the issues of climate change. I think we came on because indeed you have the Lima conference this year, or convention of parties in Peru this year, which will also be pivotal to finding this agreement and then narrowing those two tracks. Conventions and Kyoto Protocol power into something. That is one and legally binding and enforceable and but ambitious as well, you know, fair and equitable and whatever. So, at this week, our intervention has also been timeous. Oh, because now, we, of course, also on climate change, we are also aware that there will also be this national conference here. In our country, or by our country, where the body will pull in all stakeholders. When is it, October or November? November. 13th of November. So indeed, at that time, we would have visited, we would have done with all our public hearings, and we would have a sense of what our people think needs to be done. But the other value, from where I'm seated, that's could also accrue to our people on this matter is just the educational value. You know, at times we take some of these matters and we engage with them. We also do not find a mechanism of involving our people, even for their own education, if not for any other reason. But I can tell you that there could be, and there will always be, wonderful wisdom that resides with our people on these matters. And we are going there to get that wisdom. We will say what we say. And by the way, remember, when we are in public hearings are for those people who have invited ourselves, so that they say their say. We can have our own, after they have said their say, condense what they have said and then say, okay, fine. Broadly, these are the views that we expressed. But we don't go in there and want to engage with the department. This is our time to engage with the department. This is our time. That time hearing is for the public. Ours us is when we are here. We can ask the department any question. But when we are there, of course, unless we think that it again is an abuse, then if, why don't you mention this as well for the benefit? We are there in an assisting mechanism. Where we are making available an avenue as Parliament, where us as Parliament, through the Department, are interacting with our people on this matter. But I think these are some of the details that we are quite familiar with. But I am looking forward to the first one on Saturday. Sorry. On Friday. In Susuwe. Okay. So, with those words, I think we have done pretty well thus far. And I know that probably when we meet next, I don't know when we're meeting. I know that next week, we're meeting next week Tuesday. I don't know what it is that we're discussing. What are we discussing? Oh, entities. Oh, okay. Okay. All right, no, that's fine. But with those words, colleagues, friends, ladies and gentlemen, we can now go wherever we are expected. Thank you very much. Thank you. I think there's food somewhere.